Welcome to part one of our podcast entitled Brothers, an exploration of the Lithuanian side of the Fox family. I'm your host, Paul Fox, a third generation Lithuanian Canadian. This part deals with immigration, life in the new country, and what I find to be quite an odd marriage.
Program, program, get your program. You can't tell the players without a program.
It was suggested to me by an early reviewer, our son Terry, that I should outline the family structure up front so you, the listener, will have some context when names begin to be mentioned. So, my father, Paul, had two brothers, my uncles, Stan and Peter, with whom he was close all his life. Paul married my mother, Rita, and they had two sons, me and my brother, Ken. I married Jane, and we had four sons, Corwin, Taylor, Terry, and Joel. So the generations comprised three brothers, two brothers, and four brothers. Hence today's theme, that's right, brothers. This podcast is dedicated to my late and very dear brother, Ken. The bond forged in childhood was never broken. Let's talk about the family name, about which there are different origin stories. The line begins with my grandfather, John Fox, which is, of course, not the name he was born with in Lithuania. According to our daughter-in-law, Nicole, who is the family's genealogist, birth or baptismal documents from the old country show him being born in 1869 as Jonas Stanislaus Fokas, spelled F-O-K-A-S, which, if you say it quickly, does sound like Fox. Here is my Uncle Stan's recollection of the family lore.
What was the original name?
It's pronounced Fox. In other words, it's bird.
And again.
Bird, it means bird.
Although Stan clearly believes that the family name means bird, Nicole could find no word for bird in Lithuanian which comes close to Focus. Interestingly, Focus is a name found in Greece. We have documentation showing that my great-grandfather was a Lithuanian named Focus, but who knows in generations past that there wasn't a Greek lurking in the background. According to his Canadian death certificate and land deeds, grandfather went by Stanislaus Joseph, John Stanislaus, etc. Somewhat fluid. But all his working life, he was known by the anglicized John Fox. Stan remembers.
I think maybe John, now that's Jack's father, I think he spoke English, he was here first. I think he must have said, make it Fox instead of Fox. That's the way we figured it out.
Yeah.
And it's been that way ever since.
More on John Wolotko shortly. My grandmother, known in Canada by her anglicized name of Elizabeth, was born in Lithuania in 1876 as Ludovica Martha Wolotko. Martha was her mother's name. Her birthplace is listed as Sokinai, a short distance away from John's birthplace, Sialiai. Speaking of John Wolotko, Stan recalls.
And then he brought over your mother.
Yeah.
And
her brother.
And her brother. So that would have been...
Antoine Roloff, he was father. And dad, three of them.
And he brought over dad, but
yeah,
dad...
three of them.
But dad wasn't related to him.
No. No, I asked mother if she knew dad in the old country. She said, I saw him at church a few times, she said.
Did they come to Chapel?
Oh, yeah, right to Chapel, yeah.
Lithuania lies on the shores of the Baltic Sea and borders Latvia, Belarus, Poland, and Russia. After World War II, it was occupied by Russia, with the resistance resulting in massive deportation of dissidents to Siberia. It was part of the Soviet Union until 1990, when it became independent again. Now it is part of the European Union and NATO. The population is only 2.8 million. Why did the family leave Lithuania?
Nothing there for them. They had no hopes. Dad was working in the bush, and mother was working for a farmer there, but she was only a young girl. She'd have to milk the guy for getting 20 cows or more, 15 every morning and night. She was only a kid, so they didn't see any hopes there.
Where, did they live on a farm?
They lived on a old house on a farm. They were so poor they had to keep the hens in the house with them in the kitchen behind the stove. They had a few hens.
They didn't have a hen house.
No, it was too cold. No hen house. They put a box behind the stove and keep the hens in the kitchen with them.
The first to migrate to Canada was John Wolotko. In 1893, he brought over his brother Antoine and sister Ludovica. What is unexplained is why he also imported on the same trip John Fox. He was not a relative. I suspected that this was part of an arranged marriage, but Stan says no.
Was this an arranged marriage? I'm thinking the fact that he brought over your father.
No.
I never heard of that.
As was common, the weeks-long trip was unpleasant.
But Dad was sick on the boat all the way. Yeah, they came on a German boat. Mother said it was a cattle boat. It was just newly painted. She the smell of the paint. Dad got sick. He thought he'd like to go back for a holiday, but he got too sick. He wouldn't take that chance.
Did he and your mother come on the same boat?
On the same boat, yeah, the three of them on the same boat. Must took about 2 weeks or more, I guess, across the ocean. Cattle boat.
The group settled in a small town in northern Ontario called Chapleau. Primary industries were the CPR rail yards, logging, and mining. This is mainly true today. Population peaked at 5,000, but with lumber mills closing, the population is now less than 2,000. The grandparents' story took place in the early 20th century, but you will hear echoes of today. A spouse obsessed with work, a marriage spent virtually living apart for decades, and a father having little relationship with his wife and children. According to Stan, after emigrating, John and Elizabeth got to know each other in Chapleau. After 2 years, they married.
So she was about 16?
Mother?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was only a young girl when she came over here.
And how long after that was it before she got married?
Oh, I think she was married about 18, I think.
And your father was how old?
I figure about 28, I think, when he got married, I think.
So he's a little older than
around 10 years older, I think.
Now Elizabeth delivered a family. First Mary in 1897, then Peter, in 1899, Stan in 1901, and Paul, maybe an afterthought or an accident, in 1911. Mary was soon off and married to an Italian immigrant, John Ray, probably not his original name. They moved to Sudbury, where John worked for many years as a machinist with Inco. More about him later. The two oldest boys were very close and quite the outdoorsmen, hunting, fishing, trapping, canoeing, and camping, as well as doing forestry jobs. In his teens, younger brother Paul joined them in all their activities, including drinking. The older brothers were the best of friends, spending their working time together as well as their playtime. They had friends, all male as far as I can tell, but were not part of any organizations even when they were in Sudbury. It was just family and friends. In the scores of photos documenting their outdoor expeditions, there is one noticeable constant. Bottles of beer, wine, liquor in hand. Clearly the bonhomie was alcohol-fueled. But they always denied being big drinkers.
Ken, you brought your tent and you went out.
I got the tent here, yeah.
Hunting and fishing all the time.
Yeah, we put that tent up, we stay overnight or 2 nights, 3 nights, a week.
But always went out with, well-loaded with food.
Well, we went for, if we went on a holiday, we all right, but sometimes we just go for the day, we never have to liquor.
Paul was the baby of the family and accorded special treatment. With a 10-year gap between Paul and Stan, the older brothers were indulgent towards the kid. As an example, Peter recalls,
So you and Uncle Stanley and Dad, all three of you,
Not Dad, he was younger than
that. He was young. Stanley and I done most of that.
He was younger.
He didn't do very much.
He says he done a lot, but...
No, but he was playing pool most of the time. he'd come out into the yard when I was sawing wood, you know, in the stove blanks. Well, it was 9 o'clock then. Well, is it all right, Peter, if I go to the pool room? I want to play some Kelly pool or some snooker. Or something. I said, go ahead, your mind is on the pool anyway, so you may as well go. So he'd go, you never saw him the rest of the day. Then he tells you he saw a lot of wood. I often let him go, you know, different times. He'd tell you he'd done a lot of cutting, he didn't do very much.
My father was not an independent thinker. Paul treated his siblings with great deference, taking their advice and directions extremely seriously all through his life, sometimes to the annoyance of my mother. My favorite photo of my father is one at about 9 years old, outdoors, clutching a bag of candy. He is cute and seems incredibly innocent. I have to say, he remains so. He was not sophisticated, or tricky, or clever. He was a simple man all his life. I want to comment on an aspect of behavior common to my father's and Jane's father's era. The role of male for that generation did not include taking care of babies or openly expressing affection. Ken and I felt this keenly when the only physical contact we had with my father was with his hand. On special occasions, such as Christmas and birthdays, we shook hands. This lasted until I left for university in September 1967, my first time away from home. After hugging my mother goodbye, I reached out and embraced my father. From then on, at every homecoming and leaving, I hugged him. He wasn't comfortable with it at first, but came to expect it. Then I extended this action to my uncles and other males with whom I felt close. Furthermore, Jane encouraged me to be a full participant in baby care from day one. I changed diapers, got peed on, rocked Corwin for hours, walked endless miles with poor, colicky Corey hugged to my shoulder, lay with the boys at bedtime, reading stories and singing songs, carried them around until they were too big, and especially wrestled. It was a great joy to enter the house after a day at a soul-grinding job, only to be swarmed by the cutest bunch of little gaffers, to be borne to the floor with them trying to pin me. This went on for a long time, with squealing, laughing, and mock struggling on my part, until we were exhausted, or more usually, somebody accidentally kicked me between the legs. I tell you this not to put down my father, but to demonstrate the change between generations. History need not be destiny. Back to our story. John Fox started on the CPR survey crew and must have displayed ability and a good work ethic, as he was soon promoted to section foreman, extra gang foreman, and track foreman in a career spanning 38 years. His work must have been exemplary. Company policy was mandatory retirement at 65, but the CPR kept him on an extra year.
Was he glad to retire?
He worked 1 year extra.
Did he?
Yeah, he worked 66. He got tired of it. The roadmaster asked him, he said, "You want to work another year?" He said, you can work. He said, "I wish you'd stay." So Dad, "I'll try it," he said. But he tried it 1 year, and he said, "That's enough."
He had enough.
What the heck is an extra gang? And what does it do?
What did an extra gang do?
Repair tracks. Change ties, change rails.
Whatever had to be done.
Anything to repair tracks, yeah. See, the roadmaster tell him, "You go so place, so far, go here, go there. Take the gang." Well, we had about 10 boarding cars. The man slept in them cars, you see. The engine would come on, pick up the 10 cars, and he'd go. And instead of a section man had two or three men, or four, we had 50. If they got behind, and there's a big job to do, they'd send the 50 men there to do it, see.
The extra gang.
The extra gang in the room, the extra men.
Yeah. And he headed that up for 25 years.
25 or 30 years, yeah.
How does an extra gang actually operate? The crew, up to 100 men, is gone up wilderness tracks for 6 day stretches. The men sleep in boarding cars, equipped with multiple bunks, the equivalent of a bunkhouse on wheels. I have no information on feeding such a large crew, but I imagine that there was a kitchen car with cooking facilities and food stocks run by a professional cook. And this would be the equivalent of a chuck wagon on cattle drives. John, as the foreman, got better treatment than the men.
He used to come home about once a week, every Saturday. If he could get home, some more weeks he didn't come for 2 or 3 weeks. If he could catch a freight or a passenger train, he'd come home for the weekend.
And then he lived in the boarding car?
Oh, yes.
With all the rest of the men?
He had his own car. That's what they call a foreman's car.
Oh, I see.
He stayed in that car by himself. But Pete and I, we worked for a couple of years. We stayed with him. There was four bunks in there. We kept one for the roadmaster.
But his pay as foreman was not princely.
Was it a six-day week?
6 days a week, 10 hours a day.
10 hours a day?
Yeah. Then after they changed it to 8 hours a day.
What kind of wages? Must have been pretty low when he started.
And
worked his way up.
Well, the foreman, he was making fair money, but...
What was fair money? Can you remember?
I think his check used to be around $70 in 2 weeks.
About 35 a week?
Yeah, about that.
Stan and Peter started out on the extra gang, either as laborers or timekeepers.
Dad would say, here, you guys got all the rail tongs there. There's probably 6 or 7 or 8 pair of rail tongs to clamp on the rail, pick it up. You 8 or 10 minutes, you have to get them tongs and bring that rail over here. So we'd pick it up and go and do it. You learn, that's nothing to learn to work on the track, as long as you got a strong back.
What would you make when you started on the railway on this extra gang? What kind of wages would you make?
25 cents an hour.
The job changed when winter set in and tracks were snow covered. Now John was based in Chapalo for about 3 months, but he still wasn't home.
In the winter time, he couldn't do any much track work. Too much snow and ice, you know. So they brought him into Chapalo, the terminal, and he'd have about 35, 40 men there. He kept the gang all winter, and all what they did was shovel snow, clean switches, so that the yard engines could switch in the yard, do work in the yard.
So it was a year-round job?
For him, yes, for him. He was the number one, the old senior man. So his gang stayed on all the time. They call him number one extra gang.
Grandfather appears to be something of a workaholic, or maybe just a dedicated company man.
He only came home about one day a week at the most.
That's all, if he could get home, yeah.
Summer, winter?
Winter he stayed in Chapalo.
Well, that's right, he was home the whole winter then.
But he run the snowplow when he was younger. He run the extra gang, and the snowplow beside it used to plow between the Chapalo and White River. Get a snowstorm, they used to call Dad out all hours, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, or 5, didn't matter. They could rap at the door and Dad would go downstairs and fix a snowplow, engine and van and the plow ahead of it, go to the White River to plow the tracks in the snowstorm. It's mostly in the snowstorm when they call you. He's a good worker, Dad. I see Dad in the most all of winter for near. He started 7 in the morning, go home for his dinner, and go out at 6 o'clock after 6 for 7, you know. And he'd work at 10 o'clock at night, he'd come home at 10 o'clock. And morning, 7 o'clock till about 10, pretty near all winter. He worked 3 hours overnight. I see him go to White River and come back in the morning all night up. He'd go around his gang all day again. He wouldn't go to bed, he'd go to work again.
Sounds like he was pretty strong.
Oh, Dad was a strong man. Oh, he's healthy too.
Another characteristic of John Fox was his religion. He was an active Catholic mass goer.
He was religious too, and he was even working on the line there. Christmas, you know, we go midnight mass Christmas. And he might come in 7 or 8 o'clock at night from off the line, and he go to midnight mass and get to bed about 3 o'clock. He was 10 o'clock in the morning, he was back to Sunday Mass. We'd sleep in, but not him. He was going to 10 o'clock Mass again. And when he was retired, he went to
Mass every Sunday, every day, 8 in the morning. You could set your clock on him and go to church in the morning. When the church bell would ring 7:45, you could hear our back door close.
Grandfather finally retired in 1941. John's pension was modest and not collected for long. He died in 1946 of coronary thrombosis.
What was his pension?
$44.75 a month.
And he didn't collect it that long?
No, from 41 to 45, I guess.
The few photos we have of Grandfather show him in formal dress and always looking severe. At one point, the uncles mentioned that their father had a bad temper. But Peter recalled one positive side to the man when they were cutting winter wood in the yard. But remember, they were not big drinkers.
You know, one good feature about cutting wood, Dad would say you go over to the liquor store and get a bottle of whiskey. When you come back, you have a drink. We always had a drink when we came back from the wood cutting. And if that bottle was finished, he said, go and get another one. He was good-hearted like that. Today, he was very thoughtful. We were cold, you know. Some days were really cold. Yeah.
With John away 6 days a week, who was in charge at home?
When your father was away, were you sort of in charge of...
Mother was there.
Mother knew what to do.
She ran the house. Dad was away all the time.
Oh, she was always.
Dad had come home with his check unpaid, you know. He gave his mother. He never had 1 cent in his pocket.
Ludovica was 15 or 16 when she arrived in Canada. A girl, really. Back in Lithuania, Ludovica had received no education, since she was forced to work from a very early age to care for her crippled mother. Physically, she was short and stocky, 5'2", and at maturity, 220 pounds.
She came over as a young girl. She was about 15 or 16, I guess.
So they must have spoken Lithuanian.
Oh, yes. Mother and Dad spoke Lithuanian in the house all the time. Even we around, they didn't talk English to us, they spoke Lithuanian to us.
And could you speak it then?
We could understand it, we couldn't talk.
But forgotten a lot of it.
Could she speak English?
Yes, fluently.
And your father as well?
Oh, Dad spoke better English than Mother.
Did they have accents?
Accent? Mother had more accent than Dad. Dad, if he wanted, he wouldn't notice it at all.
As head of the household, Elizabeth kept very busy. No mention of the sons helping with the chores.
You had chickens, you had a cat, did you have a dog?
No, Mother used to keep cows.
Cows too?
Oh yeah, she had a cow and then she had two one time.
What did you do with all the milk and the eggs? Did you sell them?
She sold them. She didn't make a habit, but if somebody came over and wanted them, she'd sell them eggs or give them a 3 pound pint of milk, you know, a little can like that. Some of them used to come over, she'd sell it 10 cents a pound for a 3 pound pint. Yeah, she'd give her 10 cents and say, here, take the milk.
So it sounds like she worked pretty hard too.
Oh, Mother did work hard. She split her own wood in the yard too when she was young, cleaned the stable for the cow, looked after the cow. Mother was a good cook. She had the knack of putting in the right seasoning, you know.
She could pick up anything at all with that, you know. She was just a natural born cook, you know. She was a very tasty cook.
Well, you had things like pierogi.
Yeah, pierogies or roasts. Any roasts or anything like that. Turkey or beef or pork or anything like that.
She could cook anything. She was a good cook, very good cook.
She never made things like spaghetti or...
Oh, yeah.
She did?
Oh, yeah. To make her own spaghetti. Make the big round layers and cut it with a knife.
And then preserves?
The same thing, yeah.
Canning? She did all that, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, she done all her stuff.
I guess everybody did in those days.
Yeah.
Elizabeth was in charge of the family since John was always away. Her sons remember her fondly, almost with a halo. However, they expressed one major regret. They had not installed indoor plumbing for their mother. Towards the end of her life, she was very sick with diabetic complications, but still had to make her way to and from the outhouse, summer and winter. At age 65, Elizabeth died. It was 1941, the same year that John retired. Cause of death is listed as inflammation of the heart, along with fluid retention in the abdomen and legs.
What year did she die?
41.
41?
I think it was 41.
Same year your father retired?
Around that time, Paul.
Both grandparents have a headstone in the Chaplow Cemetery. This concludes part one. When we come back, you'll hear about three sets of brothers. I've included all the most colorful anecdotes I know. And towards the end, I hope you'll have a few chuckles. See you in a bit.